All right, joining us now is Tony Arterburn and of Wise Wolf Gold. And of course, Tony has set up DavidKnight.gold to let him to take you to his website, let him know that you're coming through me. Good to have Tony on because last week he was in Mexico speaking at a conference. Thanks for joining us, Tony. Tell us a little bit about that conference.
Well, thanks for having me back, David. I had a great time. It was Anarchapoco in Acapulco, Mexico, the dollar vigilante and crypto vigilante crowd. I sponsored the event. I was the only gold sponsor, and I got to speak on Crypto Day. So I had 40 minutes on Valentine's Day in the morning to speak, and it went really well. You know, these are people that, and again, the theme to the dollar vigilante is surviving and thriving after the dollar collapse, and that's been Jeff Berwick, who's the founder of that. That's been his mantra for years and years, and now we're really seeing, and that's what I spoke about on Crypto Day. And I said, you know, gold and crypto and silver, precious metals, these go together because this is we're creating a parallel system. You know, you have Gresham's law that states when bad money enters a system, good money goes into hiding. And I think that's coming to fruition. You know, the good money's coming out of hiding because the bad money that entered the system is crashing the system itself. And so that's what I spoke about. You know, everywhere you look is de-dollarization. Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's accelerating. I was looking at a story this morning, just facts and figures. You know, you look at the Russian economy. 2 years ago, only 1% of financial transactions went on in the Chinese yuan. Now it's 34%. And they've completely abandoned the dollar. When I opened up my talk in Anarchapoco, I said, the first thing I said was, when I was 23 years old, I got to see a currency die in real time, a paper currency, you know, in, you know, Voltaire's maxim that all paper currency eventually returns to its natural value state, which is zero. And that's looking at something happened to the Iraqi dinar. And, you know, we were told the first mission I had in Mosul when the Iraqi Republican Guard fell was to go to the bank. And there wasn't any other orders other than try to find some semblance of security because everybody's running out with boxes of Iraqi dinar with Saddam Hussein's picture on them. But they were worthless. Nobody wanted them. And I said, now think about this, folks. 20 plus years later, I'm talking to you and the Iraqi parliament is making it illegal for you to transact in dollars, especially for major Iraqi banks. They are abandoning the dollar. What does that say? Because the only currency that you could use post U.S. invasion in Iraq in 2003, upwards till the last couple of years, was American dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about how far the U.S. dollar has fallen. That's in the last 20 plus years. It's absolutely amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah, I wonder, you know, how much one of the Iraqi notes with Saddam Hussein's picture on it is compared to a Confederate note with Jefferson Davis's picture on it. What's the exchange rate for those two currencies? They've gone to zero, except for probably the Confederate currency is a collector's item. So, you know, it's got some value from that standpoint. But yeah, that's where it always goes. But that truly is amazing because, you know, Iraq is really still heavily influenced with U.S. troops there and all the rest of that stuff, but they don't want to use the U.S. dollar.
Well, it's because of Iran's influence in the region. Now they're Shia-based in their governance. You know, Saddam Hussein was Sunni, and, of course, the Sunni triangle, and the Sunni are the minority, and now the Shia are the actual majority in Iraq. And I think that what's happening is the long-term de-dollarization and waning U.S. geopolitical hegemony, it's showing its face right there.
Yeah.
That's really all you need to know.
And that's an important point, too, when you talk about the Shias and the Sunnis, and then, of course, we also got the Wahhabists in Saudi Arabia. Islam is not this monolithic thing. It's got all these different factions, and just like Christianity was in the Middle Ages, these different denominations, if you will, of Islam, are politically connected. You know, they have a unification just like they did at the time in the Middle Ages. There was this, you know, connection politically as well as with a church. And it was really the politics that was more important than it was the religious aspect. And so that's where these Islamic countries are right now. And people think of them as monolithic, but they're not. And they're fighting each other, not just us.
Oh, absolutely non-monolithic. Yeah. It wasn't George W. Bush who said there's different types of Muslims. Like he couldn't believe it. Like it was actually, I think it was Joe Biden when he had maybe a moment of lucidity or a talking point from a think tank. He said, yeah, I mean, this is like 20 plus years ago. He's like, well, maybe Iraq should be divided into three parts. You know, you have the Kurdish North, the Sunni triangle in the middle, and then the rest is Shia. And I thought, well, that might make sense. If someone, I've lived there for a year and I was, you know, in combat for a year there. So I know a decent amount about Iraqi history and yeah. culture.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not monolithic at all. And, yeah. But I think one of the things that unites them all across the Arab world, whether you're talking about Saudi Arabia or Iran, is de-dollarization. They're moving away from the dollar. The petrodollar is dying. Mm-hmm. Why this is not headline news all over the financial network should be talking about this, not the FANG stocks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What importance is that if the dollar dies? Literally, you know, you have Saudi Arabia is BRICS plus now. That's official. I mean, this was theory a year ago. We were saying, well, you know, Saudi Arabia is in talks with Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, which was already 40% of the world's population. Then you add Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. It's game over. Now we're still. It's funny. We're in the shadow of the once dominating dollar, and it's going away. Really, everything I'm talking about lately is leading back to de-dollarization. What happens afterwards? Because I don't think that the horse has left the barn. I don't. You can't do anything at this point. Even David, I don't even know if World War III would bring the dollar back to its original dominance.
Yeah.
You
look at Saudi Arabia joining the BRICS. I mean, that's it right there, because yes. they were really the linchpin. You know, we had Saudi Arabia and you had Iran with the Shah, and that was the U.S. Power within oil production producing area, and then tying that all to the U.S. dollar and them buying U.S. weapons and that type of thing. When Saudis leave, because we lost Iran a long time ago, but when the Saudis leave, that's it. That's really the petrodollar right there. End of game.
Yeah, that's all she wrote. And then the dollar's propped up by something called money velocity. And we spoke about this many times, but yeah. money velocity is basically, it's like the Ponzi scheme. When you quit using it, you could liken it to Tinkerbell. If you don't clap, Tinkerbell dies. And the same thing with the dollar. If you don't use it, it dies. And you've got 80% of all the $100 bills ever made in physical form are not in the United States of America. They're being used around the world. And that's when I saw, you know, and as a young soldier, when I saw people just dumping the Iraqi dinar, it went to zero, and using the American dollar, I thought, okay, well, this is pretty universal. Now they're not using the dollar. That's slowly going away. You have, there's a gold boom going on in China. They're not exporting. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the Swiss, the 6-year high on gold exports to India and China. So even in the midst of China's real estate decline, massive bubble and recession, they've overbuilt their currencies in real trouble, but they are buying gold. And while the rest of the world sleeps, I don't think they realize what's happening.
Well, and of course, commercial real estate issue that's there. But even beyond that, China was way overbuilt and other things. And the stock market getting very, very shaky now with these big companies getting shaky like Evergrande. And they imposed, they basically just stopped a company that was selling too much stock too quickly because they're afraid that the whole market there is going to collapse. That's how shaky it is in China. So they're putting all kinds of draconian restrictions on their stock market. There's an interesting article from International Man, the number one warning sign that capital controls are coming soon. Just like the Chinese are putting controls on the stock market, we could have these capital controls happen here on cash and all the rest of this stuff. And as he points out, he says, it's already been done in a lot of different countries. Argentina, Lebanon, Venezuela, Iceland, Greece, Cyprus, Turkey, Russia, Ukraine, China, India, South Korea, and governments in countless other countries have done these capital controls and done it recently. And so he says, so what's the sign that it's going to happen here in the United States? He said, the warning sign to look out for is when they say it's not going to happen. when they start to talk about it and say, well, you know, the capital control, don't worry, it's not going to happen. That's when you got to be concerned that it's going to happen real soon after that, right?
It's like the early 70s with price controls.
Yeah.
You know, Nixon took us off the gold standard in August of 1971, and then that followed with price controls because they had to figure out how to stop the runaway inflation. Gold went up 2,000% in the 1970s, but gold didn't go up in value. So run that through your mind. That's what I try. It's counterintuitive, folks. The gold is not going up necessarily. It's the dollar is going down. It's losing purchasing power. And you read off that list of countries. Most of those economies, I say the majority, are not doing well. We're talking about Venezuela. They're selling off their gold holdings because so much debt has come due. Argentina, same thing with their currency imploding. So those measures don't work.
Yeah,
and it's free floating fiat currencies. There's 52 times more currency on Earth today than when I was born 44 years ago. We have a massive systemic worldwide debt problem as well. These things are coming together. And I think it's culminating in what the IMF is even saying at Davos. You know, this the most headwind of an economy since World War II, which... Well, it's interesting. We're in a fourth turning. Isn't that interesting? 80 plus years on, that's where we are. And so we're positioning yourself. And I see this even, and this is an open question. I asked this at Anarchapoco to the crowd because these are crypto people. I said, well, most of the time, you know, I'm pretty pessimistic about the ruling class and what their views are. You had Larry Fink come out and say from BlackRock and say that Bitcoin is now a store of value in digital gold, which is a long way from where they were, you know, 5 years ago, basically saying that it's only used in illicit activities and money laundering and terrorism. And Warren Buffett said it was rat poison. Jamie Dimon said he'd fire any trader that went. Now they all have ETFs.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So something's afoot there. You know, I had Stuart Englert on, who wrote the book Rigged on the gold and silver markets and has dug into this for years and years about how they rigged the gold and silver markets. His theory on the Bitcoin ETF was that it was going to be used to suppress the price. But now we see, you know, gold or Bitcoin at 51,000 and some change today, up 30% in the last month. Mm-hmm. So there's something to that unprecedented historical activity in the currency markets, David. You see a big finance moving away, buying gold, even actors like Larry Fink saying that Bitcoin is digital gold and a store of value. So there's something there. It's an off ramp.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah.
For the elite. We're still looking at that.
Well, you know, I guess maybe Bitcoin was too honest for them. They had to come up with some kind of a devious derivative to attach on there before they could really double down on this thing and make it work for them. Maybe that's what it is. They're just waiting to roll out some kind of an ETF on top of it so they could manipulate it in that regard. Yeah, I don't trust these guys, but it is kind of interesting to see how that is going back and forth. We've got are these any questions? Yeah, we got some. Do we have questions for Tony? Let's see. Yes. Because Tony had said, if you want to do, we're doing Ask Me Anything questions here. If you want to ask him some questions, he'll take them. On Rumble, we have Sprumford says, even after endless pep talks, my bookcase continues to whimper at the sight of Tony's. So that's you got a massive bookcase there. That's great. He likes your bookcase. Kareem, thank you for the tip. He said, Tony, they just wanted you to clean up after the Israeli Special Forces team that already took the Iraqi gold from the vaults. There you go.
Well, that's where the Israeli army was. I never saw any Israelis when I was over in the Middle East fighting for AIPAC.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see. I don't think these other questions are for Tony, but anybody has any questions for Tony, he certainly is willing to take them. You know, when we look at what happened with Argentina, Javier Milei, which I have my... I have some concerns about him, especially after he went to Davos, because that always puts a red flag on somebody for me. You can criticize Davos. You can criticize him to their. I never went to Davos, but I got blocked by Davos, by the World Economic Forum on social media. I never addressed them directly, but you know, so you can say things that get their ire up and that get noticed at least by them, if not by other people, without going there. And I always worry about people who physically go there. But he has focused, like he said, the central bank in Argentina was awful. He says, I don't like any central banks, but some of them are worse than others. And so he's shut down the pretty much their thing and pegged it to the dollar. Their inflation, Tony, has gone from 150% to 250%. Did he pick the wrong central bank horse to bet on?
There was an article I read on my show about a month or so ago on LouRockwell.com about Millay. And he has ties to the IMF. He has ties to BlackRock.
Yeah. Yes.
And Argentina was moving into the BRICS periphery. So did they, was this a coup to keep Argentina out of the BRICS? Because that seems, that's the trend. That's where the energy is going. And, you know, like we've talked about many times, you know, the weaponization of the U.S. dollar, our actions. Not only that, it's not only just the weaponization, but our economy is weak. And we're not making strategic decisions about production or wealth or any of those things. And I think the world knows that, looks at us and says, well, you're not doing well financially. You weaponized your currency. You know, there's 40 different sanctions on 36 different countries. We're out. And Argentina was one of those. And now you have this chainsaw wielding guy.
Yeah.
And it sounds good. It sounds good on paper. He's an anarcho-capitalist. You know, he talks about gold. He flies the anarcho-capitalist flag. It's gold and black. He's got all of that going for him. But there's just something. It's almost too good to be true. So I'm skeptical and pegging yourself to the. There's so many other alternatives, you know, the ways you could go. The dollar, and you know, and you and I have spoken about this. It's just, again, it's about usage, and the math is not going to be there for you in the long run. Maybe the short run, there's not many places to go right now. But again, 2001, 75% of all the global transactions went on in dollars, and now it's 43% and declining rapidly. Mm-hmm. So that's a trend you'd want to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that gave me red flags when the chainsaw, all of the theatrics and stuff. And it's like, okay, well, I don't know the country. I know that works, but I saw these games, these theatrics, the over the top criticism of other people, and then coming around, all the stuff, same type of thing that Trump did, and then coming around and making friends with him, just like the World Economic Forum, as you point out. He's got these ties to the IMF. He was all over the Pope, who was from Argentina. And a Marxist, for sure. So he hated him, and it's like, okay, well, he doesn't like the Pope, and then he converts to Judaism and everything. But then he goes to the Vatican, and now they're all buddies there. You know? Right. And so it's like, wait a minute, there's something really phony going on here. I don't know. Maybe this is
like funniest. Trump in 2016, exactly. You know, because you'd be in jail, and then you fast forward after his inauguration. So she's a wonderful person.
Yes.
She's good people. Exactly. You know, and that's just, you know, I had the privilege of being on air with G. Edward Griffin. While I was producing for Don Jeffries about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And you get to talk to the wise old sage. I mean, G. Edward Griffin, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, and such an activist, the John Birch Society, and has been so far, he was so far ahead of his time, you know, and he's in his 90s, and he's so sharp. And I told him, I said, I read The Creature from Jekyll Island, and that was one of the reasons I'm in the gold and silver business. And we got onto a series of questions. I said, what's the one thing that you would warn the younger activists about and those who are you know, fighting this battle, what would you warn us against? And he thought about it and he said, controlled opposition is the number one threat. It's the people that look like they're for you and they're not. So you can guess where he is politically. Like that was his theme. He's like, you know, it was a warning from the old sage. And I need to have him back on, but I think, wiser words were never spoken.
Yeah, I'd love to get him on again. I talked to him once years ago, but he's right about that. And if you go back and you look at what was it, somebody like G. Edward Griffin, who knows the Marxists and knows how they set this stuff up, it was the Bolsheviks who set up the trust. That's what they called it. They ran all the anti-Bolshevik organizations were run by the Bolsheviks so that they would know, they funded it. They did everything they could to promote this so they could draw in all their opponents and know who they were. And we see this happening over and over again. That's why we look at Trump, you look at Javier Milei, it's like, it's definitely with Trump. Javier Milei, it's still kind of early days, but a lot of signals that's really, I think, what is happening there. But getting back to the capital controls thing, I thought it was interesting because he said, you know, the first thing is they're going to say that they're not going to do capital controls. So when they actively deny it, you know, they're about to impose it. And so he says, so what do you do about this? And so he has a couple of things here. He says, have a foreign bank account, have real estate in a foreign country. And I looked at these first two things, and I thought, that's exactly what Pfizer was doing. You know, when they went to Brazil and to Argentina and a third Latin American country, which was not named by Stat News, a pharmaceutical publication, they basically said, you're going to hold us harmless, not just for the vaccine itself, but also for negligence in manufacturing and shipping and all these other types of things, which was not anything that anybody else was doing. But we want to have an insurance policy, essentially, on foreign assets, bank account assets, land and things like that, that Argentina and Brazil and these other countries have in other countries, so that we can get to that stuff. And so, yeah, that is absolutely true. So there's nothing that we can really do about that, most people. But he mentions then Bitcoin, and then he mentions physical gold bullion coins. These are really the fallbacks that we've got. Are to, you know, to prepare ourselves against these capital controls, are to have physical gold and to have Bitcoin and things like that. That's really the only thing that we've got in terms of a financial aspect to make preparations for something like capital controls, isn't it?
Yeah, not ETFs.
That's right. Yeah, not ETFs. They're actual
things. Not paper, not GLD, not SLV, and not whatever ETF is claiming that they're buying Bitcoin. You need to have your wallet, your keys. It's really not hard to learn. And you talk about cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is the only crypto I'm buying right now. And that's because of its decentralization. It's not run by a company. It's not run by a country. Mm-hmm. And it has lasted. You know, that it's still growing. The network's growing. The adoption is growing. So I'm bullish on Bitcoin. I'm not even really in the Bitcoin business anymore. I was some of the first Bitcoin ATMs in this country, and I learned a lot from it. But really, my mission right now is still precious metals, and that's gold and silver. No counterparty risk. That's the main thing. No physical gold and silver. No counterparty risk. And one of the things I was talking with, it's very hard to move physical precious metals across boundaries. That's why, like, you see people getting into jewelry. That's just always a good idea. Think ways that you can travel with it. But when you're talking about a significant amount, you're looking at storage, and I'm will be announcing something soon on being able to store for people. I'm looking at a Texas location, possibly within this year, to do some legitimate secured storage for people, that especially if they're going to be living outside the country.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, if they're outside the country, one of the things he cautions about is be careful about bank safe deposit boxes, because it's going to be one of the first places that they go. And we saw that happen in California, where they went into that one area and the FBI stole all of this stuff from everybody. I mean, you know, there's one or two people there that might have been involved in criminal activity, but they got it from everybody by going into these safety deposit boxes. It's just that's a difficult thing. Well, I got a couple of questions here. Well, let's start out with the funny one here. Billy the Kid, part two, says, I just bought gold for the first time, Tony. I spent $3,000 and got me three pairs of Trump sneakers. Is there real gold in Trump's sneakers? I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's anything real about those. But I love that question. Here is a more serious question. I like that joke for Tony. Sprumford says, Tony, what are your thoughts on silver versus gold? Is silver worth holding?
Stack silver. Silver long term, it's the price, the word I would use is ridiculous, because we, if you look at the price history, 1980, $52.50 an ounce. Now, what's the purchasing power of $52.50 in 1980 versus today? It's what's probably like $250. Mm-hmm. The disparity there is insane. I'm about to release an interview I had with Peter Kraut, who wrote the Great Silver Bull book, and we really dove into, not only is the price of silver manipulated, I mean, J.P. Morgan's been convicted of this. It's counterintuitive, because most people don't pay attention, because it's a price manipulation to suppress it. Now, why is that? And who is the largest holder of silver in the world? Oh, it's J.P. Morgan. So they're buying physical silver. And that's the thing, is you're talking about hundreds of millions of ounces in deficits now for the demand versus the production. So the recycling, I've discussed this on my interview with Peter, most of the silver, it's in landfills, you know, but because it wasn't worth getting out of the electronic components to get thrown away. Only about 20% of the silver that hits the market is from silver mines. The rest of it is just found in either recycling from jewelry and other places, or found in gold mining, copper mining, and they just, well, that's extra, so they set it aside. There is not a lot of silver mining going on, so while the price is suppressed, it's too cheap to even go get it. So there's going to be a reckoning, and I have seen intel that a lot of the big banks have stopped their shorts on silver, which they normally short it, and a lot of them are pulling those shorts. And so I think there's going to be, in the next year or so, again, not investment advice, has nothing to do with investing, just watch this, because I think it's going to become less and less available. And even after the market's corrected some and it's stabilized a bit, I still don't even see the amount of availability that I saw in 2019. It's, we're not even close to that. So there's something, if there was two or three whales that wanted to come in and buy up the silver, they couldn't place the orders. We know that. Yeah. In the physical precious metals business, you can't lock those trades. So I would say get physical silver and stack it for the long term, because it's way out of, even the gold and silver ratio historically is something that you need to pay attention to as well, because it's always been either 10 to 1 or at the highest 20 to 1. We're at 87 to 1. And that's even during the height of the scamdemic, 125 to 1 at one time in the first quarter of 2020. So that disparity, there's a reckoning coming in the price of silver. I don't know when, but it will happen. Math eventually kicks in.
And when you say it's counterintuitive that they're getting this to depress the price, but we've seen that type of thing happen before. I remember when the real estate market started collapsing, and it's like, so what's their game on this? Because all of a sudden, I remember we had a neighbor who refinanced their house, and they got a really, really low interest rate. Their payments went down. They got cash out of it and all the rest of the stuff. And we looked at it, it's like, well, maybe we should do that. All of a sudden, within a week, the interest rates just jumped. And they said, well, it's something that happened in California, now spreading all over the country. And it's like, well, I don't know, but you know, why would they do this? Well, we see why they did it. They depressed the price of housing, and they bought into it. And they do this. They create, just like the warnings about the creation of the Federal Reserve said, they'll create bull and bear markets, and they will profit when it goes up and profit when it goes down. And so when they start depressing stuff like this excessively, you know that they're playing a longer game, and they're going to do something to, on the other side of it, they are going to artificially increase it probably as well. We got another couple of questions here, I think, for you. Tony, what states can your paper goldbacks be used in?
Well, there's even in states where they're not used officially in those states, there's locations. You can find that on the goldback websites. But there's Idaho, there's Wyoming, New Hampshire, Utah, just to name a few, and there's others, and we're getting more in the more access to those in the coming months. But yeah, you can look, and you can actually find locations. Like me, I accept goldbacks. You can use goldbacks at Wise Wolf, or both in my Texas location and Branson.
Yeah,
and there's individuals. So yeah, you can go on their website, and there's a list of companies and locations. So it's really all over the country, not just those states.
That's somebody asked me that question the other day, and I said, well, you know, when I was talking to Aaron Day, he wrote a book about CBDC, and he's talking about that. And he's very heavily into Bitcoin, gold, and silver. But he said, I give people these gold paper notes, and I'll give them a little sheet, you know, leave it as a tip. When I'm at a restaurant, I'll give them a little sheet and tell them what this is. And that's the key thing. You know, whatever it is, it's a medium of exchange. And, you know, for the most part, other people, if they buy into it, you're good. It doesn't have to be something that is officially recognized at the state level. It just has to be recognized by the person that you want to buy something from. And if they understand what this is, then, and you may need to educate them on that. But if they understand what it is, you're fine with that. And so that's the key thing about all of this stuff. And you know, we have, they're going to try to pull on the other side. You're already starting to see some trends like we see in the UK and other countries would say, we're not going to accept cash. We're not going to accept paper money. from the Federal Reserve, even though it says on it, this is legal tender for all debts, public and private, that type of thing. They can just say, no, I don't want to take it. Well, legally, they have to take that, I believe. And they don't legally have to take anything else from you. I mean, you could have a gold bar there that you want to give them for a stick of gum, and they don't have to take that, like they would have to take the paper money. But if they know what the value of it is, they would certainly accept something that is way out of a lot more valuable than what it is that you're trying to exchange for them. So it's just that there has to be, a give and take there in terms of making it legal tender. Even though gold and silver is recognized in the Constitution and referenced, still have people that might say, well, I don't want to take the gold or I don't want to take the silver or whatever. So, it's just one of those things. But I think that it's what I like about it is the fact that it is it breaks down the gold in terms of a small enough unit that you can actually do something with it. And if things hit, then it'll really get popular, I think.
I have watched them grow in popularity. It's surprised me over the last 5 years. When I started my business 6 years ago, there, I almost had no business done in goldbacks, and nobody asked for them. I get requests all the time, and I finally just said, every membership level in Wolfpack, even the Wolf Cub, every month gets goldbacks. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets goldbacks because people like them. And I think you're right. They're divisible. They're recognizable. They're 24 karat gold. So you can't go wrong with them. Even if you can't spend them right now, I promise you eventually you will be able to. There's more and more adoption every single day. I mean, people, and we've talked about this, because of inflation, people are starting to pay attention to the currency again, and it's not getting better. It's not going to get better. The price of groceries is through the roof. They even had an article a couple of weeks ago on MSNBC or something like that, and they said, the price of TVs is stabilizing. The price of electronics is going down somewhat, and used cars is going down, but food keeps going up, and we can't figure out why. Well, the economy's bad, and people aren't buying the TVs or the electronics as much. There isn't as much demand. That's economics 101, but people still need to eat, so that's where all the inflation is at right now. This is something it's not going to get better. So goldbacks, fractional silver, fractional gold, these are all really great things to have in the parallel economy that's forming itself. That's really, it's becoming, it's organic, it's building itself at this point.
That's right.
Because of the dollar.
I got a comment along those lines from the dude 7781. He said, when the shelves of the store are empty, a can of tuna then becomes worth far more than any lump of gold or paper with some dead guy's picture on it. And that's really, when we look at it, it's relative to whatever the current situation is. You get to those kind of a dire straits where, people are starving, then it's going to come back down to the can of food. It's going to come down to the lead that you've accumulated in terms of ammunition and things like that. That's what it's going to devolve to. But, we're looking at a situation where if we go in, something that that I've been through, you've been through as well, what we saw in the 1970s, the disruption that comes from inflation is just so incredibly difficult and to live through. And I've seen that happen. I've seen what it does to everything when inflation picks up like that. So that's one aspect of it. The second aspect of it, of course, is the de-dollarization. We've never gone through anything like that in our lifetime. We've always had the dollar be the king of all currencies. So we've never seen what that's going to look like. But then the third thing is the CBDC. And the CBDC types of controls could be put there without a completely grid down apocalyptic scenario where we're all fighting over food. The CBDC scenario could be imposed before that happens. And to me, that's really what, setting some money aside in gold and silver and the people want to do it, Bitcoin, that's what that's really about, is a hedge against the CBDC types of surveillance and control, where they still have the ability to get food, but they're just going to keep you out of the system. And you've got to have some kind of a parallel underground economy, gray market or even black market. That's where these things are going to come into play, I think.
Well, I agree with the assessment on a can of tuna. Robert Kiyosaki tweeted that out a year ago, saying, you know, that, again, you can't eat gold and silver. Even he said that. You can't eat gold and silver.
And I can't eat tuna. I can't. It's going to have to be something else besides tuna for me.
Well, what gold and silver and Bitcoin are is this a bet that civilization will continue.
Yeah.
And without civilization, you know, monetary exchange units aren't relevant. Food is relevant. Water's irrelevant. The way to protect yourself is more relevant. So it really just depends on the degree of what kind of dystopia we're walking into. So, you know, would that surprise me if there was no economy? Probably not, for everything I know about history. But I think that, you know, you're right. This, any sort of pause in what we deem as normal, we have normalcy bias. Any sort of pause or disruption in that will be where they insert the central bank digital currency. That threat has not gone away. It still trickles down into our news feeds. They're still working on it. You know, whether it's the IMF with their Unicoin or the Bank of International Settlements, the unified system that they want to create, the top down CBDC control system, that's being implemented.
Yeah.
So it's coming. They just need a crisis. Yes. And it'll be, oh, by the way, we've got your wallet. We've already got you 50, you know, just do a Hail Satan and scan your biometrics and we'll give you your central bank digital card. You can go buy groceries again and you're an approved citizen and you're essential. Yes. You know, all this language will be used again. So that hasn't gone away. So the fight for us to create parallel systems are like Catherine Austin Fitz has been talking about with sovereign state banks. And, you know, we have so much on the horizon that's good news, but you don't for a second think that they have stopped their plans to create that top-down totalitarian control grid with the CBDC.
Yeah, as you point out, they've got all these different ones, Unicoin, WorldCoin, I mean, and all these different central banks have got all their different coins. And as you see them saying, with World Economic Forum, what we got to, and at the EU, we got to have these things interoperable with each other. That's the key. They're all designing all their own unique things, and they'll be out there just like you can get a 1 ounce gold coin, and it'll have, you know, maybe you get a Viennese coin. It's got, you know, an orchestra with a stuff on there. You got American Gold Eagle or a Krugerrand or whatever. They've all got their little stamp on it, but it's all essentially the same thing. So they're going to have their, just like they got different gold coins that they mint, they're going to have these different CBDCs, but they're all going to be interoperable with each other. And so they're creating this infrastructure. It's pretty much already in place. It just got to pull the trigger and unify it all. That's what we got to be concerned about. Another couple of questions here. Actually, this is a comment and a tip. Thank you, Guard. Appreciate that. He says, not that the cold weather here in the New Hampshire studio inspires my thought, but I wonder if Tony got info in Mexico regarding freedom lovers who are trying to leave the U.S. and where they're headed, if so. What about
lots of expats? And they had a whole system there at Anarchapoco and through the Dollar Vigilante. You can go check out their website. They've got people that can help you, you know, relocate. You're looking at other countries that are, well, possibly friendly to, you know, former U.S. citizens or dual citizens. And, you know, whether it's Mexico or Panama or Nicaragua, I've met a lot of people there that had moved out and they're spending most of their time in South America and other places. So, you know, do that research for yourself. It's funny. Almost everywhere I go, I meet people that know Guard too. And I was, I was in Anarchapoco and I was like, one of our, a mutual friend now. And I said, I'm talking to Carla. He goes, oh, tell Carla. I said, hi, you know, from New Hampshire. And so it's interesting. You just meet people and people know Guard, you know, his reputation is magnificent. Internationally, Guard, I meet people, I say, you know Guard Goldsmith? Absolutely. He's one of the greatest guys. So smart. Yes.
Yeah. So well deserved. He definitely deserves that recognition, and they're wise to listen to him. Yeah, you know, I had that experience. Karen and I went, and I think it was 1998. My mom had died. She'd had a stroke. We were taking care of her, and after she died, we thought, well, you know, we need to think about, and I'd been thinking about leaving the country ever since there was the Ruby Ridge in Waco. I thought, yeah, you know, I think we've crossed the Rubicon here for sure. So we went to New Zealand to take a look at living there. I actually set up a bank account temporarily there for a while and closed that now. But I looked at it seriously. And I just, you know, of course, I met with some people that were there that were also liberty lovers And so we had this discussion about who had it the worst. I think they convinced me that America wasn't as far along as New Zealand was. But I just, even then, you know, when I was 30-something, it was still, I was too attached to America, really, to leave it. So I thought, well, might as well just fight it out here. So that's where I was, why I'm not an expat. Another question for Tony here from Sprumford on Rumble. He says, thanks, Tony, for the silver advice. Any preference for large bars versus American Eagles, other than it's obviously a better deal to buy bars?
My advice to my customers is always get the amount of ounces closer to how much the dollar units you have. American Eagles, the premiums on them, I don't agree with those premiums. Now, you're still getting silver cheap. I mean, it's probably $31 an ounce for an American Eagle today, and I haven't checked. That's probably retail, around 30, 31. While you could stack, you know, 100-ounce silver bars for around 25, 20, 25 and a half. So you really need to take a look at how many ounces you're getting, because that's what's going to be most important. Now, in your trading ability, fractional pre-1965 silver is a really good thing to have. If you join Wolfpack, we do a lot of the 10th-ounce pieces. I was actually putting 10th-ounce sovereign silver Britannias. That'll be coming up in the next series of Wolfpack packages. I just bought about 5,000 of those.
Wow!
So we're gonna be putting those in the orders soon. So we do a lot of fractional there. So if you've got tradable silver, that's the first thing you're going to want, is tradable silver. American Eagles are fine if you can get a good deal. But after that, when you've reached a point where I've got all my tradable silver that I'm probably going to need for an emergency or for a while to spend, you know, if there's a problem with the dollar or a currency run on the dollar or a currency collapse, after that, stack the ounces. And one of the best ways to do that is just get a recognizable bullion bar. Kilo and up is probably the best deal. Kilogram bars are a good deal, all the way up to 100-ounce bars. Always a good deal.
Yeah, if you got the money for a 100-ounce bar, that's a good, you're doing pretty good there. That's good to know. It's been great to have you on. I don't have any more questions here for you from the listeners, but and I know you got to get going, because I usually do about a half hour or about one and a half times that. So thank you so much for coming on, Tony. Always interesting to talk to you. And before we go, anything else you want to tell people about what is happening at Wolfpack and with Wise Wolf?
Well, first of all, always a pleasure to talk to you, David, and it's an honor to sponsor this program. And I know how I heard the first part of the show, and you talked about radio, and you and I will talk soon. We've got freeworld.fm. We're working on launching, and I want to include you on that. And I know that it's tough. It's yeah. Tough to broadcast. I know I run your broadcast short burst, and it's exhausting. I love doing it, but I know how much it takes out of you and how much you're giving to the audience. So we'll definitely discuss that. Wolfpack is growing. We're doing our best to find interesting products and find good deals. I looked at the latest invoices. You know, if you look at your savings. I want people to pay it. When you get the new invoices in, check out the savings, because I'm meticulously going through product when I buy it and see what I can do to save people money, especially with shipping and credit card fees and all that. And it's generally significant. I have bought in the last couple of weeks close to 5,000 ounces of Canadian silver maple leaves that are brilliant uncirculated, with still the box isn't opened yet. So you're getting a lot of great stuff in Wolfpack and saving money. That helps support David. So you can go to davidknight.gold, check out the tab that says join Wolfpack and the deals that are coming. We're working on the website, all that good stuff. And my two physical locations are there to serve people. You can do one-time purchases, 401k, rollovers, IRAs, all that stuff. And we're just working on faster shipments and better customer service as always. And thank you again for having me on.
Well, thank you. And thank you for supporting us. And it really is a great idea what you got in terms of group buying and being able to do it in small quantities and on a regular basis. That is something that is a very unique service, and you do a great job with that. Thank you so much, Tony. Again, Tony Arderman of Wise Wolf Gold, and you can find his website and let him know that you're coming through us if you go to davidknight.gold. All the connections are there to take you right there. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. The
David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. Trust the science. Wear your mask. Take your vaccine. Don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.